Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Dave Long. You may begin.
Thank you, Jeff, and welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is debugging top 10 WMB problems with databases on Windows and Unixes. This session is scheduled to be an hour in length, but might extend to an hour and a half for the presentation and the Q&A period. If you have not yet joined the web conference, please do so now. The web conference address is available on the WebSphere Technical Exchange website. Today's webcast will include an online presentation, and once you are in the web conference, you will see the presentation. If you are unable to access the web conference at this time, please go to the WebSphere Technical Exchange website and click on today's presentation title. The document that displays will contain a PDF file of the presentation. You can also obtain a copy of the PDF file by visiting the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange program on Twitter at www.twitter.com/IBMWSTE. This call is being recorded, so you can replay it at your convenience. By early next week, the MP3 file, along with the presentation, will be available on the previous webcast tab of the WebSphere Technical Exchange site. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask you to respond to a few quick polling questions. At the end of today's session, the lines will open for question and answer period. For those of you who joined us via the web conference, you can also post your questions in the group chat. Precedence will be given to questions asked through the phone, and if time permits, we will also address the questions in the group chat. Today's presenters are Vivek Grover, Dave Crichton, George Blue, and Lawrence Hook. Vivek is a Level 2 Technical Support Engineer for WebSphere Message Broker. His responsibilities include troubleshooting customers' real-time problems worldwide and providing resolution. Dave Crichton is the WebSphere Message Broker L3 Technical Delivery Lead. His responsibilities include delivery of code fixes for customer-reported defects and delivery of new functions and service releases. George Blue is a developer for WebSphere Message Broker and has worked on JDBC and the IE02 support pack. Lawrence Hook is a software engineer at the IBM Hursley Lab in the United Kingdom. He has been a member of the WebSphere Message Broker Level 3 service team for the past 12 years since the product was first released. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Dave. You may begin.
Thank you. Can we start on slide 2, and I'll just run through the agenda quickly? Okay, so we're going to start you off today looking at the BIP 2322E message, and then we'll swiftly move on from these basics to more advanced topics like character conversion, ODBC connection problems, JDBC connection pooling, ODBC and XA, OUC with Oracle Rack, JDBC connectivity and XA, and finally JDBC for MAP. So if we could move on to slide 3. So one of the most common messages we see in PMRs raised by our customers is BIP 2322E. And one of the reasons for this is it's a very generic message. It's raised any time the broker gets a database problem. And the information for this message is really given in what we term the inserts of the message, and that's where we need to look for the specifics of the failure. So we can move on to the next slide. I've shown you an example of a BIP 2322. At the top, that's what the message looks like before it has been filled in with the specific information from a specific failure. And on the bottom, we have each of those inserts filled in with some information from a real failure. In this case, it's an IM001 failure, and that indicates that the driver manager does not support this function. So each of the inserts actually has quite a specific use. And if we move on to the next slide, we can see what those are.
We're on slide 5 now.
Yeah. So the first insert is the SQL state, and this is actually part of the ODBC specification. And it's a 5-character code that's supplied in a diagnostic data structure when broker makes an ODBC call. For those not familiar with ODBC, that's the API specification that broker uses to make database connections at a native level. Now, the ODBC specification lists some SQL states, which all vendors must implement, and they always mean the same thing. But individual vendors are free to expand the SQL state to include their own SQL state codes. So the second insert is the native error code. Again, this is something that's given back to us by the ODBC API, and this is for errors which occur in the data source itself, and the driver is supposed to pass that through to the calling application. Now, these messages are always database and vendor specific, so the best place to look for those is in your database or vendor documentation. And finally, we also get a text message sent back to us for each database failure. And these have two possible formats depending on where the problem occurred. They always start with the vendor identifier, and that's the vendor of the database, then the ODBC component identifier, and then you'll either get a text error message, or if this occurred in a data source, you will get a data source identifier and then a text error message. So if we go back to slide 4 for a moment, so you can see here the SQL state with the 5-character code is IM001, and that is actually one that's mandated by the ODBC specification. In this case, the driver never managed to actually connect to the database, so there's no native error code to pass back, which is why you see the native error code returned as 0. And finally, the message in this case is the Microsoft ODBC driver manager does not support this function. And that tells you specifically what the error means in as much detail as the driver can pass back to you. Really, in a lot of cases, you'll need to take the SQL state and the native error message and search in documentation to find more detail on what that's telling you. Okay, so if we move on to slide 6, we'll go through an example of a BIP2322E failure. Now, in this case, we have an IM004 failure, and the message is somewhat cryptic. It says, driver's SQL alloc handle on SQL handle end failed. And again, we have native error code of 0. Now, in this case, the database being used was Infomix. So we could move on to slide 7. So the inserts don't tell us that much. They tell us the driver hasn't managed to establish a connection to the database, and we can look up in the ODBC specification what calls this SQL state is applicable to. In this case, it's applicable to calls which are trying to make an initial connection to the database. Now, this is almost always an environment problem. We could move on to slide 8, please. So the first step when checking environment problems, you can use the MQSI CVP command, which is shipped with Broker, and you can see if that command reports the same problem. This is particularly good if you want to try and get some easy checks out of the way, like checking the username and password are correct. If MQSI CVP succeeds, then it could tell you what information you need to change using MQSI SetDB palms in order to get the broker to work as well. So after you've done a basic check with MQSI CVP, some other things to check is if the ODBC environment itself is configured. So on Windows, the ODBC environment is configured in the ODBC Data Sources Manager. And on Unix, you need to set two variables, ODBC INI and ODBC SysINI, and they need to point to readable files. Finally, the DSN entry for the database you're trying to connect to should be in the ODBC INI file. If we could now move on to slide 9. So, assuming that the ODBC INI file is configured correctly, we also need to check that the native environment is correctly configured. Now, most drivers need some setup of the native environment in the broker profile. This is typically done in libpath, path, or ldlibpath, depending on the driver you're using and the platform you're using it in. Now, this problem that we're looking at the moment occurred in an Infomix database, and if you follow the link listed on the slide, I've actually put the relevant content on the next slide, in slide 10. Move on to slide 10, please. You can see that Infomix actually requires quite a lot of setup of the environment in order for its driver to actually work. It needs to have a number of Infomix-specific environment variables set, and it also needs to have a number of paths placed in the lib path so that the driver can find parts of the Infomix installation itself. We can move on to slide 11, please. So in this instance, you can use LDD. LDD is a tool shipped on Unixes to check the shared library dependencies of a file. You can use this on the library that you're using to connect, in this case on the driver library that's listed in the ODBC file, and that will tell you what libraries the driver relies on, and it will also tell you which ones can't be found. So in this case, you can see it couldn't find libifgls.so and libifglx.so, and this tells us that there's something missing from the libpath. Maybe we could move on to slide 12. Discover what the libpath is. The easiest way to do that is execute the broker profile and then just echo the libpath environment variable. And we can see here that /user/infomix/64bit/lib/esql is missing from the libpath, and it should be added using export libpath, just as you would for any other path variable. So before we go ahead and check out the broker, we move on to slide 13. We can actually set that environment variable and rerun LDD, and you can see that it's no longer giving us messages saying that it can't find some of the libraries. Once you've made this check, you can then restart the broker with a new environment and the problem should be resolved. Okay, we can move on to slide 14. Okay, so this is another example of a BIP2322E. As I said before, it's a very common error message. And in this case, we're using a DB2 database. So as before, the first steps are to identify the inserts in the message that's given on the syslog. So in this case, the SQL state is 40001, and the native error code is -911. And finally, the diagnostic message is the current transaction has been rolled back because of a deadlock of timeout with reason code 2. If we can move on to the next slide, please. So 40001 is also part of the ODBC specification. It indicates a serialization failure, and it's applicable to a wide range of different API calls. So that doesn't actually give us too much information. We can move on to slide 16. Now, the description for native error code -911 is the current unit of work was the victim in a deadlock or experienced a timeout and had to be rolled back. The reason code indicated whether a deadlock or a timeout occurred, and the reason code 2 means a deadlock. The other reason codes are 68 for a timeout, 72 for a DB2 data links manager error, and finally 73 for queuing threshold reach. All of that information is taken from the DB2 Info Center, and you can find links to that in the resources section at the end of the presentation. You can move on to slide 17. So in the deadlock scenario, most commonly you have application code, which is causing the deadlock, which is operating, you might have two or more instances operating on the same data in a table causing the deadlock. So the first thing to check is the number of additional instances deployed and if there are any other applications accessing the table. It's also important to understand the transactional settings on the nodes performing the DB work. For compute nodes, if your transactional setting is automatic, the work is permitted or rolled back at the end of a flow invocation depending on the success of the flow itself, whereas if it's commit, the work is still committed at the end of the ESQL compute node, which includes work performed downstream of the output terminal, but it's not at the very end of the flow invocation itself. And a lot of the time, just by analysing the statements that are called between your different nodes, you'll be able to find a flaw in application logic that's causing your deadlock. So that's actually covered slide 18. So if we can move on to slide 19. So the other thing that can cause deadlocks, particularly with DB2, is that DB2 can attempt to escalate row locks to table locks, and as a result could be locking more of the table than you expect when you design your application logic. Now, you can identify applications holding a lock using the DB2 command get snapshot for applications on, and then the name of your database. You can also increase the diag level to 4, which causes DB2 to output lock information to db2diag.log. We could move on to slide 20. So in this case, we looked at the DB2 diag log, and it turned out that the max locks database configuration parameter, which determines when lock escalation is triggered, was set too low, and this was causing row locks to be escalated to table locks far too early for the application that was being used, and the resolution was to increase this value on the database. Okay, if we could move on to slide 21. Okay, so this one isn't a BIP 2322 for a change. This one is covering character conversion problems. So quite often, the data stored in databases and processed in Broker isn't always in the same code page, and unexpected character conversion can cause either parse failures, so you might see a BIP message indicating that parsing or serialization during the message flow failed, or you might also see data corruption, particularly with natural language characters. And the reason for this is that multiple code page conversions can occur depending on your exact scenario. So if we move through to slide 22, that's the wrong way. Okay, so here we start off with our data in the database, and it can talk to the driver, or in the case of the Oracle driver, client at Broker 6.1, in either ANSI or UTF. And that depends on a negotiation between the driver and the database, and it will also depend on exactly how the data is stored in the database. At this point, it's not visible to Broker itself. Now, the driver manager can also communicate with the driver by either UTF or ANSI, and that will depend on whether it's received UTF data from the database itself. If you have received all UTF data, then you're fine and no conversions will have occurred. If you're working with ANSI data, then you will actually get a conversion depending on the value of the IANA app code page, and that's a variable stored in the ODBC INI. Now, the driver manager itself talks to an ODBC layer in the Broker, and it does that by UTF. And then finally, before you can actually get that data from the ODBC layer into the message tree, it needs to be converted to UCS2, which is a double byte Unicode code page. And there's a conversion that can happen there, which is specific to the database and platform that we're reading on. And that can be overridden by MQSI ODBC associate converters. But as you can see, there's 3 or 4 places you might get character conversion happening. So if we move on to slide 23. First thing to check is IANA app code page in ODBC INI. Now, the precedence order of this setting is it will first look in the DSN specific stanza, it will then look in the general ODBC stanza, and the values are documented at DataDirect's website, and you can go and look those up at the URL provided. In general, you should always attempt to match this to the Broker's code page. We can move on to slide 24. So the second thing to check is the Broker's code page. This is set by a precedence order of environment variables. So we'll look first at MQSI local CCS ID, then at LC_all, and finally at the lang settings. And this will be after running the MQSI profile, of course. On Windows, we'll look first at MQSI local CCS ID, and then we will take the system language setting. You can always check what code page the Broker is running in by issuing the MQSI service command. And you can see that's an example from my Windows Broker that was running in code page 850. Could move on to the next slide, please. And the final thing to check is the database code page itself. Now, for most databases, the code page that the data is stored in is a combination of the column type and the database-specific settings. And I've listed some examples for each database of how you can get information about what type of columns are stored in what code page. So for DB2, for example, you could do select code page from syscat.datatypes, where type name equals varchar. On Oracle, it's a very similar select statement. This time it's on the NOS database parameters table, and you can select a parameter like NOS underscore char. On Infomix, you again have a select statement. This time it's select tab name and site from infomix.sys tables, where tab name is like GL underscore percentage. On SQL Server, the sys.databases and sys.columns returns collations information. Now, collations are like a combination of code page information and also stores information about byte ordering and how to compare different data types, and they're very specific to SQL Server. So what I've done there is included a link where you can go and read more about SQL Server. And on Sybase, you can execute the command sp underscore help sort. Okay, we can move on to page 26, please. So the next thing to check is the bound data converters. So stored procedures bring back their data by binding against individual parameters. And we've set these up so that the default conversions that happen are what we expect to get depending on your platform and your database vendor. But they can be overridden using the MQSI ODEC associate converters environment variable. Now, those of you who've had to use that before have probably just been given a rather cryptic set of numbers and characters and wondered what they mean. As it, the meaning of that environment variable is a combination of four pieces of information. In digit one, you have a single digit that indicates the data type, and that we use to select the correct converter for the database. The second digit is the SQL data type to use when binding. That can be either single or double byte characters. The third digit is the minimum bytes per code point. The X character in the middle is whether to set a UCS2 connection attribute. As I said before, UCS2 is a double byte Unicode code page. And then the final four digits are a code page identifier to use for the conversion. So we move on to page 27. So an example of a typical conversion issue. We had a problem where we're using a Unicode UCS2 database, and the character represented by the Unicode code point 0178, which is a Latin capital letter Y with diuresis, is inserted as corrupted data into a database table. Now, the code point itself is valid in UCS2 in both the database and the broker, so that means that some kind of interim conversion must be taking place in between the database and the broker. So we could move on to slide 28. So, as I said, the first thing to check is the IANA app code page. And when we checked in this instance, it was set to 4, which is the alias for Latin 1. Now, the character that we were trying to pass through in this case is not a valid character in Latin 1, and so we're ending up with a conversion. And the fix was to change that to an appropriate code page. In this instance, the broker was running in Windows 1252, and the character is valid in that code page. So the fix is to go and look up on the DataDirect website what the IANA app code page value for Windows 1252 is. And that happens to be 2252, and the resolution is to set that in ODBC.ini. And I'll pass on to George, who will be talking about IM002.
Hi, I'm George Blue, and we're looking at problem number 4 on slide 29. And you'll see here that you've got an error message, and it's an error message that you get on the command line or in the syslog. And with error messages, I often read them from bottom to top. So we see we've got a BIP 8040, which is a generic database error. There's a BIP 2322, which we've looked at a couple of those earlier. And we see its SQL state is IN02. And there's a message associated with that. And also there's a BIP 2393, which tells us, again, it's a database error, but it also tells us the driver manager that's being used, in this case, libbipodbc.so. So what's causing this error? And if we move on to slide 30, then we see that one of the things that makes ODBC errors complicated to diagnose is that actually there are many layers and components. So here in this diagram, on the left, we've got WebSphere Message Broker, which is the core program of that. And that talks to a driver manager. The driver manager can be Data Direct, it can be Unix ODBC, or it can be the Microsoft driver manager on Windows. And that driver manager has some configuration information, which may be stored in a file system, or it may be stored in the Windows registry. And the driver manager talks to one or more drivers, and the drivers themselves talk to the database. Now, they may talk via a wire protocol that's over the network, or they may connect to a database client, and that may the client may talk to the database using shared memory or using a wire protocol. It all depends on which particular database vendor's in use. But once you understand this big picture about the different layers, then actually a systematic approach usually resolves most problems, just going through one layer at a time, checking that it's configured correctly. Let's move on to slide 31, where I talk a little bit about the driver manager. On slide 31, please. Thank you. And there are three types of driver manager that can be in use. On Windows, it's very easy. All versions use the Microsoft driver manager. But on Unix, it's more complicated. Version 6.1 uses Data Direct. Version 8 of Message Broker uses the IEO2 support pack, which is based on Unix ODBC. And on version 7, the default is to use Data Direct, same as version 6.1. And the IEO2 support pack is an optional extra. So on version 6.1, we know we're always using Data Direct. Version 8, always using IEO2. But version 7, it could be using more than one driver manager. And that's why, from version 7 onwards, the BIP message, BIP 2393, always contains which driver manager is in use. So Data Direct is libbip ODBC. IEO2 would say libODBC interface, and Microsoft would always say ODBC 32. Let's move on to slide 32, where we discuss the IM002 message in a bit more detail. And this message originates in the driver manager, so in that the layers that we looked at earlier, it's the driver manager that's causing this issue. We rarely see the issue on Windows, though in principle you can. It's almost always one we see on Unix, and it could be that the ODBC configuration file can't be found, or that the file can be found, but the data in the file, particularly relating to the data source name, is either not found or not valid. So because we know that this is an error from the driver manager, we don't need to worry about anything further downstream yet. We need to look at problems with the driver manager. And the solution in this case is on slide 33. Actually, we find that most of the problems are either typos in the ODBC configuration file, or they're a misstep in the ODBC setup. I've listed a number of things to check here. Check that the ODBC INI file has been customized, either you've taken the file, put in your database information, made a copy of it with that information, and are pointing to it with the right environment variable. Check that the data source name relating to your database is in the file, and check that the top stanza in the file, which references all the other stanzas, references your data source name. Check things like spelling, capitalization. Remove any extraneous white space. We've had a few issues where white space has caused issue for customers. It shouldn't really, but it has, so get rid of it. Check the ADBC INI file. Environment variable points to the right file. The ODBC INI is used for version 7 and version 8 and also version 6.1. In version 7, there's an additional environment variable, which is ADBC UONE. And there's also the extra environment variable, ADBCISINE. They're all documented. It's always worth double-checking them. And we also recommend these variables ideally should be set by a script in the WorkPath Common Profiles directory. And that way, anything that runs MQSI Profile will pick up the right environment variables. I used to work setting up test machines for Message Broker, and I came across this error, must have been hundreds and hundreds of times. And every time, almost every time I came across it, it was something I'd done slightly wrong, a configuration step missed or something. Very occasionally, it can be a genuine bug in Message Broker. So if you can't resolve it, then raise a PMR. It could be a bug. But 99% of them are relatively simple to resolve just by double-checking, getting somebody else to check, and working through it step by step. Let's move on to slide 34, where we talk about problem 5, and that's a slightly contrived problem. And the problem statement is that you're using JDBC to connect to a database, and you want to have, say, 100 message flow instances, but your database will only support 10 concurrent connections. Now, in its default mode, Message Broker will connect to the database as many times as you have message flow instances. So if you've got 100 active message flow instances, then you'll end up having 100 database connections, assuming they're all doing database work, of course. Potentially, you can end up with more than that number of connections if you're connecting to multiple databases, but we'll keep it simple for now. And there are many situations where the database has fewer connections available than you want to have message flow instances available. So what you can do is limit the number of connections used. And what will happen in that situation is that Message Broker will make as many connections up to that limit, and it will not go beyond that limit. And that's done by setting this max connection pool size parameter in the appropriate JDBC provider. And we can see on slide 35, we've got an output of a JDBC provider, and we can see highlighted that the max connection pool size is set to 10. When that value is set to 0, there is no limit. Some considerations on slide 36. Firstly, this is only available from version 7.0.0.1 onwards. It only applies to JDBC connections. And there are a couple of JDBC nodes, database retrieve and database route, that it doesn't apply to. And also, it only applies to connections that have been obtained in the Java compute node using the get JDBC type 4 connection API. Now, the performance, where there's no limit on connection numbers, the performance is typically about 5% slower. Obviously, if there is a connection, there is a limit on connection numbers, then message flows will have to wait for a connection to become available. And they wait up to 15 seconds for a connection to become available. If after 15 seconds no connections are available, then an error will occur. And that really sums up the JDBC connection pooling. So we'll move on to slide 37, where Lawrence Hook will take over.
Thank you, George. Slide 37. Okay, we're now going to take a look at an XA problem, ODBC XA problem. This specific problem is a message flow is configured to be globally coordinated using MQ as the transaction manager and with an Oracle database as an XA resource. And we're getting another example of the BIP 2322E error, database error. This time it's XA underscore start has failed, so the call to start a globally coordinated transaction has failed. Now, most XA problems that we see tend to be configuration problems, so I'm going to take you through the configuration steps, have a look at those in a bit more detail. and also see what was the cause of this particular error. So if you can move to slide 38, please. Okay, broker currently supports XA with following databases, DB2 and Oracle, and limited support for Sybase on just one platform, that's Linux, the system, X64 at broker version 8. Now, to configure XA, we need to look at three particular areas. We might have the database to configure itself, MQ needs configuring, and there are also some steps for message broker. So we go through those one by one. If we move on to slide 39, please. Okay, there's a link there at the top to the particular topic in the information center, which covers the particular task that you need to do for each database to enable XA. As we're looking at Oracle for this particular problem, I've listed the particular tasks here on this slide. The first one is to ensure that the Java XA package is present on the Oracle database. And you can do this by using the SQL plus command describe Java underscore XA. And it's this particular package that if it's missing, then you will see an XA start failure. We've seen that quite a few particular scenarios. So it's an easy one to check. So that's listed in the information center. Another requirement is also to check that the user ID that the broker uses to access the database has the necessary Oracle privileges to access the DBA underscore pending transactions view. Again, the SQL plus grant command is listed on the slide here and also available, of course, in the information center. So configure the database, that's step one. And we're going to move on to look at what configuration steps need to be done for the Transaction Manager MQ series. We move on to slide 40, please. So for MQ, we need to define in the qm.ini an XA Resource Manager stanza. I've given you the example here for Oracle. The name could be anything you like, that doesn't really matter. But the key things I've tried to highlight in red and blue on this slide. So the switch file. But for Oracle, it would be UK Aura DTC 24. So it's listed in the information center. You don't need to put the full path to that file, because we'll see on subsequent slides that we will create some symbolic links from MQ to locate the right files within the broker installation directory. So just the file name is required there. In the XA open string, key piece of information are the host name, the port number, and the service name. So the host and port identify the Oracle listener that you would prefer to connect to. And the service name could either be, you could either use a service name or you could use a SID. So on previous releases, so looking back to version 6.0 and 6.1 of Broker, we've always recommended using a SID, which is the Oracle system ID. Now our preference is to recommend user service name, because that tends to be used more widely in Oracle 11 and Oracle 10 configurations. We'll look at the service name a bit later on. So specify either service name or SID, and the data source. So field there, data source equals my data source name. Your data source name must match the DSN standard name in the odpc.ini file. So that's the link to the odpc.ini file. Once you've configured your qm.ini file, you need to restart the queue manager to pick that up. Another thing you need to do is to make sure that the $odpc environment variable is available to your queue manager on startup, because that also requires access to that particular file. So can we move on to slide 41, please? Okay, so this is where I was talking about creating the symbolic links from MQ to point to the broker installation files. So we provide a command called MQSI manage XA links. And this will create links in both the /var/mqmx64 directory and also the /var/mqmx64 directory, the 64-bit EGs. So example here for creating the symbolic links from MQ to the DataDirect 6.0 drivers. The format of the command would be MQSI manage XA links, create is the verb, DD60 to identify the DataDirect 6.0 drivers, and then your broker installation path. And that will create a number of symbolic links in /var mqmexits and x64 to point to the appropriate switch load files and the file that it depends upon in the broker installation directory. We move on to slide 42, please. So we've configured the database, we've configured the queue manager. We'll now look at what we need to do for the broker. So in the odbc.ini file, you would have configured a data source name like you would have done for a non-XA connection, exactly the same. And that data source name must match the name given in the XAOpen string that we looked at previously. So once that's defined, then the final step is to deploy a message flow for XA by, in the broker archive file, the bar file, on the actual flow, there's a property called coordinated transaction, which you need to select before you deploy that bar file. And then once you deploy that bar file down to the broker, then you're ready to process globally coordinated transactions. Okay, can we move on to slide 43, please? Okay, we're now going to take a look at Oracle Real Application Cluster. So problem 7, you are using Oracle Real Application Cluster in an active-passive configuration. When a failover occurs to the standby node, the message flow appears to hang. Some of the symptoms you might see are there's a build-up of messages on the input queue waiting to be processed. Trying to stop the flow or restart it, there's no response from that flow. Often we will recommend you take a PStack or PropStack output against the data flow engine process, and that will give us a call stack. And what we're likely to see in this particular scenario is that at the top of the stack we've got a call to TCP/IP receive just sitting there, and we might ask you to take a prop stack on two or three instances with, say, 15-second intervals, and that stack trace doesn't see. So that doesn't change. So we're pretty sure that we're hanging in a receive call. So we're waiting for something, response to come back from the database. We move on to slide 44, please. So quick discussion about Oracle RAC before we move on to exactly why this problem occurred. So Oracle RAC was introduced in Oracle 9i. They build upon the basic Oracle architecture to provide a highly available and scalable system where a single physical database is serviced by multiple concurrent instances. So instances collaborate with each other, they work with each other to provide a single service to client applications. Now, Broker has supported Oracle RAC since Broker version 6.0. Move on to slide 45, please. Okay, so this shows a typical configuration that we see that customers are using where we've got an active passive setup. So we've got two nodes, node A and node B. Each hosts an Oracle instance. We've got instance A and instance B here. Now, with Oracle RAC, you tend to define a service where that service can, that service is hosted on a number of instances. In this particular case, we set the service to have a preferred, or rather the service is preferred to run on node A, or instance A, and you define node B to be an available instance. And what this means is that client connections will go through to node A, preferably. But if node A ever fails, then node B is ready on hand to take over the work. It's available. Okay. Can we move on to slide 46, please? Let's talk a bit about failover. Oracle RAC provides two methods of failover, connect time failover and transparent application failover, abbreviated to TAF. Now, connection time failover is the ability to connect to the databases through alternative listeners. No transaction state is preserved during a failover. Now, this is the failover method supported by broker, because broker really needs to the broker manages database connections. It manages the ODBC connections itself, so it needs to know when a connection breaks. So when a connection breaks, we expect to receive an exception back from the driver manager. We will then clear down the connection details, and the next message through will try to connect again. It will try to connect to the main hostname port again, but if that fails, you can also define a set of alternative listeners to try to connect to. And we'll look at that in the slide a bit later. Transparent application failover is slightly different. It's If a communication link failure occurs after connection has been established, the connection can fail over to another active node without the application knowing anything about it. Now, as we said, the message broker manages the connection, so we really need to know where the connection has been broken so we can re-establish it. So this particular method of failover is not currently supported by a message broker. Can we move on to slide 47, please? Okay, to configure RAC then on a Unix and Linux environment with a wire protocol driver, I've given an example here. So we said earlier that in early releases of Broker, we tended to use a SID, the system identifier, to identify which particular instance to connect to. But now with RAC, we can potentially connect to multiple instances that all provide the same service. So here we specify a service name. We've also got the host and port name of your preferred listener to connect to. But as well as that, we've got a property called alternate servers. And in here, you can list a number of alternate servers. You need to specify the information of host name, port number, and service name. You can add any number, and they need to be comma separated. In this particular instance, I've just got one alternate server defined for node B. Can we move on to slide 48, please? So that was looking at how you configure the alternate servers on Unix and Linux. In a Windows environment, you need to use the ODBC Data Source Administrator. So you go into that and you need to select the DataDirect Technologies Oracle Wire Protocol driver. This will show that this will come up with a drive setup window, as you can see on the right here. It has a number of tabs along the top. First thing you need to do is go to the General tab, and that's where you'll enter the preferred hostname or port of the Oracle listener you want to connect to. And you'll also set the service name. But then additionally, if you are using RAC and you want to take advantage of RAC failover, you need to go to the Failover tab. And on there, you can list the alternate servers like we saw for the ODBC INI file itself. And also, there's a failover mode property down towards around about the middle there. That needs to be set to mode 0 for connection time failover. Okay, we don't support any other failover mode. So once you have that defined, then you should be set up, ready, to take advantage of Oracle RAC failover. Can we move now to slide 49, please? Okay. So we saw there that we set a failover mode for Windows, but that wasn't listed in the example ODBC INI file settings that I provided on slide 47. The failover mode is available to be set in the ODBC INI file, but the default value is 0, so there really is no need to set it because that is the only value that we currently support. But it is available. A couple of other properties that I thought were worth mentioning that we don't document is that we do support a client load balancing using Oracle RAC. So where you have a number of instances providing the same service, you can load balance between those. And the way you do that is by adding a new property to the ODBC INI file, or you can specify it also on the Windows setup pane. You set load balancing equals to 1. And with that set, then the driver will alternate, it will round robin between the host names that you defined to try connection attempts. Server-side load balancing is, however, not supported by the broker. Two other properties, connection retry count and connection retry delay. So you can specify a count, which is the number of times you would like to try connecting to the Oracle database before giving up. And you can specify a delay between those attempts. So I think connection retry delay in seconds. Can we move on to slide 50, please? Okay, so we're back to the original problem where we saw that we have a hangover during failover. So at the top of the call stack, we saw a TCP/IP receive call. And this indicates that the socket hasn't detected that the other end has gone away after abrupt failure. We've seen this in quite a few instances where it just seems to be hanging there in a receive state. And the solution is here to use the property query timeout and to add that to the ODPT ini file, or it's also a property on the Windows ODPT configuration. And the query timeout is the number of seconds for the default query timeout for all statements created by a connection. Default is zero, which means it will wait indefinitely. So you might want to set that to, say, perhaps 30 seconds. So if your SQL statement has had no response from the database in 30 seconds, then you want a timeout exception reported back to the broker so that the flow can carry on. Move to slide 51, please. Okay, we do provide XASQL with Oracle RAC, so I just thought I'd include what additional settings you might need to make to enable that. Again, you want to use the service name in the XA open string, and we don't list alternate servers, so in that XA open string, we just define one host, one port, and one service name. But if you have defined the alternate service in the ODPC ini file, then they will get used. If you remember, I did say it's important that you export your ODPC ini environment variable before you restart the queue manager, so it has access to the ini file. And because the queue manager, being the transaction manager, will create its own connection to the database, so it needs to know the ODPC ini settings. There's one new optional property that we've added. This is called CTO, standard for connection timeout in seconds. You can add that to the XA open string, CTO equals number of seconds, so say 30 again. And that's used to prevent hangs during failover if you're using XA. So the query timeout is for non-XA connections, but the CTO value will be used by the transaction manager connection. Okay, I think when we move on to slide 52, I'll be handing over to Vivek.
Thank you, Lawrence. So we're starting with problem number 8 on slide 52. The problem here, basically, if you've configured a message flow to connect to an application database via JDBC, it's possible that you may see a BIP6233E error. Basically, if you're trying to use a Java Compute node or a custom Java plugin node, or even one of the native nodes like a mapping node or a database route or a database retrieve node, you may deploy your flow while these nodes are connected, making connections to the database. At runtime, your transaction may fail with a JDBC connectivity error with a BIP6233E followed by a BIP4362E, and I put the description of those error messages here on this foil. But a problem like that typically results from a misconfiguration of a JDBC configurable service. So the important thing is to check the NQSR report properties output for the JDBC provider configurable service. It's also useful to check your broker logs and the execution group standard or standard out logs for any Java-related exceptions. Let's move to slide 53, please. So this foil basically lists the configuration needed for JDBC connectivity to a database from a message flow. Before we go over that, let's quickly go to slide number 35. David, if you don't mind flipping back to slide 35, covered earlier by George. This slide displays the JDBC provider configurable service for a DB2 database. These are the properties that you are required to configure in a JDBC configurable service. So starting with the connection URL format, this parameter provides a template for all the connection parameters that broker ends up using while making a connection, a JDBC connection to the database. This parameter, however, by itself should not be touched. But based on the connection URL format, you select the rest of the parameters listed down below in that output, such as a server name, database name, or port numbers. In addition, you would also need to reference the JDBC driver, which has to be procured from the database vendor. Unlike ODBC, Message Broker does not ship JDBC drivers. Message Broker Runtime does not ship JDBC drivers. There are also some other parameters that you may need to configure based on your requirement, such as JDBC provider XA support for XA configuration. It's advisable to discuss these parameters with your DBAs before you attempt such a configuration. Let's come back to slide 53 again. The first command here, MQSI report properties, displays the JDBC provider configurable service for all the databases, including the default templates. You can either modify an existing template for the database that you're trying to connect to using MQSI change properties command. The full command is listed at the bottom of that slide. Or you can also use Message Broker Explorer. In my opinion, that's a much easier choice and a very straightforward tool to configure these JDBC providers parameters. You can also choose to create a new configurable service. If you don't want to use the existing template, you can create a new configurable service based on the existing templates. And you can use MQSI create configurable service command to do that, or you can use Message Broker Explorer to do that. We'll see the Message Broker Explorer way in just a little bit, but this command, I've given an example for each of these commands here in case you would like to create a new configurable service or modify an existing template or just display all the JDBC providers that have been defined. Let's move to slide 54, please. So within the JDBC configurable service, there is also a property called security identity, which basically provides the username and password that broker will use to connect to the database. And you have to run MQSI setdb params command to associate that security identity with the database and the user ID password combination. So once the security identity is created, then you want to point broker to that identity, and you would use MQSI change properties command to associate JDBC provider configurable service with that security identity. Again, the command here, MQSI change properties, for a DB2 underscore 1 as the JDBC provider configurable service, and you created a security identity with a value of DB2 data source 1. The command to create the security identity is with the setdb params. You're associating broker to with that security identity, and you're providing the username and password with the dash U and dash P parameters there. Let's move to slide 55. This foil shows the screenshot of a configurable service in Message Broker Explorer. So like I mentioned, there is a template provided for each of the supported databases, and you may either choose to edit it or create a new configurable service altogether based on this template within the Message Broker Explorer. You can see the configurable parameters that we just discussed that were highlighted on slide 35 earlier, and we just discussed. So you would also be able to display them using MQSI report properties command, and you can view them via Message Broker Explorer. So you can set them directly right here in the Message Broker Explorer tool, when you finish them, you can simply restart your broker for these values to take effect. Next foil, slide 56, please. So the solution for BIP6233E basically requires you to recheck your configuration for JDBC provider, ensure that the connection URL format parameter is not touched, but all the parameters listed in the connection URL format are correctly configured, including the security identity. And also check the message flow. So check the Java node properties, check your Java compute node. If you're using Java compute node or the Java plugin node, then the name of your JDBC provider service must match the data source name parameter in the getJDBC type 4 connection call that is made from the node. I've given an example here. So if you have created a configurable service for DB2 by the name DB2_1, then make sure your Java compute node or your Java plugin node points to that configurable service in the getJDBC type 4 connection call. You could also be using a mapping node or the database retrieve or database route node. And if you're using a mapping node, the name of your JDBC provider service must match the database name that is used by the database transforms in your graphical data map. The database name is typically determined by the database definition file in the data design project that was used to create the map, and we'll see how that is done in one of the later problems. I didn't mention the database retrieve node and the database route node here, but that's pretty straightforward. The name of the JDBC service, JDBC provider service, must match the value of the data source name property of those nodes. So I've given an example of Java compute node or a Java plugin node, and the other ones are pretty straightforward. And the mapping node we will be discussing a little later. Let's go to slide 57, please. So moving to next problem number 9, we quite frequently see problems with JDBC XA setup or sometimes we get a request for the steps for configuration of XA with JDBC. So I've laid down the steps here for configuration for JDBC XA. The first step is to configure the JDBC provider service as described in problem number 8, but also check with your DBA for the values of these of the parameters, especially JDBC provider XA support and type 4 data source class name, or in case your database requires any additional parameters, make sure you discuss them with your DBAs. Quite often we notice that the DBAs are already aware of what needs to be configured, but the broker admins, the information, for whatever reason, if it isn't related to the broker admins, we get to see some mismatches there resulting into the exceptions. So configure the JDBC provider service as described earlier. You are required to define, in addition to the configurable service, you would be required to update your qm.ini file for the broker queue manager. If you're on Unixes, but if you're on Windows, you can update your queue manager properties using MQ Explorer. You can also do that via for any of the Unix brokers if you have an MB Explorer connecting to the remote queue manager. But there is a stanza for XA Resource Manager here with four parameters listed on the slide. The name field, you would specify the database name. The switch file is the JDBC switch, or it's constant JDBC switch, or you can, if you're on Windows, then you would provide the fully qualified path to jdbcswitch.dll file. The thread of control, it's recommended to have that set to thread for performance benefits. You can also set it to process, but the details of these parameters and their benefits can be found in MQ, WebSphere MQ Information Center. And I believe we provide a reference to that in our last on our last slide. Let's move to slide 58, please. So in addition to the qm.ini file and the JDBC provider setup, XA configuration also requires you to copy the JDBC switch file from message broker install directory slash bin into WebSphere MQ install slash exits directory, and that's on Windows. If you're on Unix, you can create a symbolic link to the switch file located in the message broker install slash lib directory to var mqm slash exit 64 directory. The same point that Lawrence also touched upon earlier. You can create a symbolic link here on Unixes. This was a required step, and a lot of times we find if the customers haven't created the correct links or the links do not have the appropriate permissions, you can expect to see the exceptions, the configuration exceptions. So let's move to slide 59. So you would also need to specify in your bar file containing your message flow that it needs to use XA. And the way you do that is by selecting the coordinated transaction in the configure tab in the bar editor. And that's pretty much it for the JDBC XA. Some useful points to remember here is that if the database is restarted or brought down, then the broker also would be required to be restarted. If you are on Windows, and this is applicable just for JDBC XA, if you are on Windows and configured with DB2, then ensure that MQ and message broker user IDs are members of the group DB2 users. And once you've defined the configurable services, make sure you restart the broker. And that finishes the JDBC XA setup as well as problem number 9. Let's go to our last problem on slide 60. So this problem we are discussing here, the problem we're discussing here is that if you're using a mapping node and you need to map objects using a database on the source side or the target side, but you're using Data Source Explorer view in the toolkit, and you're successfully connected to the database as well. At least the tool shows that you're successfully connected to the database. But when you're trying to map objects, your database tables are not listed in the map. So even though you appear to be successfully connected to the database, your database tables are not listed in the map view, and so basically makes you unable to do any mappings here. And the most likely cause for this is also your connection configuration on how your connection is defined, or maybe a misconfiguration somewhere. So basically, we need to go to your toolkit Data Source Explorers view and check the configuration for your database connection. And we'll see some screenshots. Let's go to slide 61. So this foil shows a couple of screenshots of your Data Source Explorer view in the toolkit. In the DB Explorer, Database Explorer, you would basically see your database connections as you can see on the screenshot. This view usually appears, but if you right-click on one of those database connections, you would see the view that's displayed here in the screenshot. And the database connection properties are displayed. And in this case, I've shown a view for DB2 database and a Derby database as examples. But you can see on the screenshot itself, on the left-hand side, now scroll-down bar, there's all the databases, supported databases, are listed there. Let's go to slide 62. So check for the database name, check for the host, port number, JDBC driver. Basically, every database has different set of parameters for required to make the JDBC connection. Make sure you go over these configuration parameters and their values. Some JDBC driver jars are shipped with the toolkit. For instance, DB2, Informix, Derby. These driver jars are shipped with the broker toolkit, basically provided with RAD installation that's packaged with the toolkit. And for the rest of the databases, like SQL Server or Oracle or the other databases, you would have to procure the jar files, the drivers, from the vendors directly. And then you would rebuild your and save your project interchange file, and then do the deployment. Let's go to slide 63. So if you go to double click on the map under your toolkits, so you've defined the JDBC connection, and then you go into your message flow and open your toolkit map. You would see if you go to the map editor, you would see you would have to click on select rows from, there's an icon for select rows from a database. That's the icon that you need to click on. So the example screenshot here shows a screenshot of a map within the node, within the mapping node, and I've clicked on select rows from the database. Let's go to slide 64. Then you click on the add database in the new database select window, and then import from the database. As you can see from the first screenshot, you're doing add database. It shows the next screenshot. It gives you the next foil where you click on import from the database, and go to slide 65. Once you've selected the database, it will show you a selection from where you would choose the database connection that you've defined in the previous step. You defined in the Data Source Explorer view. So select that connection, followed by the required schema, and that will give you the screen that's captured on slide 66. Let's move to next slide, 66. So after selecting the schema, when you finish creating the database, your definition file, it will then bring you to the screenshot displayed here where you're expected to see the database tables now. And you can see these database tables listed there. and those are available for your mapping. So that concludes the configuration of database connection using a graphical data mapper. One thing to remember is that once you finish your mappings and develop your flow, you would be required to set up your JDBC configuration on the runtime broker as well, which can be done as per the steps described in problems 8 and 9. So on this slide 67, it contains some important links regarding ODBC JDBC configuration for your reference. Let's move to slide 68. So this chart includes links to a number of sites that provides valuable online resources for WebSphere products. We're on slide 68. Visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming webcasts like the one you attended today, and access any previously recorded presentations there. IBM DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. Visit WebSphereUserGroup.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. And the SR tools is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, or view PMRs online. And the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you sign up for free weekly email updates for products of interest to you. And now I hand over the session back to David, see if we can address any questions.
Okay, thank you, Dave, George, Lawrence, and Vivek, for a great presentation. Before we get to the question and answer session, we would like to conduct a short poll. Four questions will appear in the web conference, and your responses are greatly appreciated. The first question is, on a scale of 1 to 5, choose the number that best describes what you think about this statement. The information presented today was useful to me. Strongly agree, neutral, disagree, or strongly disagree. I will pause a few seconds to collect the responses for this question. Thank you. Moving on to the second question. On a scale of 1 to 5, choose a number that best describes what you think about this statement. The material was well organized and clearly presented. Again, I'll pause a few seconds for your responses. Thank you. And moving to the third question. Did this call meet your training expectations, yes or no? And the last question that we would like to ask today, how did you hear about today's WSTE webcast? Thank you for your responses. We do appreciate your input. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe. Also, if there's a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We do welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks for your participation. And moving on to the Q&A session, I would like to remind you that for those of you who joined us via the web conference, you can also post your questions in the group chat. Precedence will be given to questions asked through the phone, and if time permits, we will also address questions in the group chat. At this time, Jeff, we would like to open the lines for questions.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. To withdraw your question, please press star 2. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. At this time, there are no questions.
Thank you, Jeff. I do have one question in the chat, and the question is, is it possible to display the number of active ODBC connections to a database?
This is Lawrence here. Now, we normally suggest to customers to look at that from the database side. So certainly with DB2, there's a way to list all the connections to the database. Trying to remember what it is. DB2 list applications, I believe. We might also hold that information within the broker. We're just currently having a quick look to see whether it's a resource, it's part of the resource statistics that we might be able to get out. But certainly we recommend using the database to view that.
Okay, thank you. I do not see any other questions in the group chat. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site by early next week. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Vivek, Dave, George, and Lawrence, for presenting today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.